Today on Conflict, getting on track with international conflict resolution. Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, November 25th, 2003, and coming to you live from WGMU in George Mason University, Fairfax, Virginia, this is Conflict. Good afternoon and welcome to episode 12 of Conflict, the radio program that explores successful, non-adversarial, collaborative, and non-violent approaches to addressing conflict. Today on our program, we're joined by a very special guest, Ambassador John McDonald. He is a lawyer, a diplomat, former international civil servant, development expert, and most of all, peace builder. He's concerned about world social, economic, and ethnic problems. And he spent 20 years of his career in Western Europe and the Middle East, and worked for 16 years on United Nations Economic and Social Affairs. He is a co-founder and currently chairman of the Institute for Multi-Track Diplomacy in Washington, D.C., which focuses on national and international ethnic conflicts. In 1992, he was named Distinguished Visiting Professor at George Mason University's Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution, right here in Fairfax, Virginia. Ambassador McDonald, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Sean. It's a real privilege to be with you this afternoon.
Well, there's certainly so much to talk about in your long career of diplomacy and now the nonprofit, non-governmental organizational world with your Institute of Multi-Track Diplomacy. And I know you have a lot of stories to share, so I'm not going to take up much of the time here on the mic, and I'm going to turn it over to you to maybe first if you can just kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about that background.
I'm a lawyer by training and education. I've been a U.S. diplomat for 40 years, so that's a long period of time. The last 15 years, I've been working with non-governmental organizations in the area of conflict resolution. So this balance between what we call Track 1 diplomacy, which is government to government, and Track 2 diplomacy, which is citizen to citizen and non-government, is quite a shift in my own career pattern. But in 1985, while I was still at the State Department, I wrote the first book on what we call Track 2 or citizen diplomacy. And when it was finally published, it was a revolutionary document in the State Department, I must confess. They didn't really want something published that showed there was another way to do business than the State Department way. Then I retired, became a law professor, and then became the first president of the Iowa Peace Institute in Grinnell, Iowa, and started expanding the two-track concept to five tracks. And then in 1989 and then in 1991, Dr. Louise Diamond and I wrote a book called Multi-Track Diplomacy.
I've got that right here.
And the next, thank you, it's in the third edition now. And the next thing we did in 1992 was to create an institute by the name of the book. The concept of multi-track diplomacy is what we call a systems approach to peace. We are in a circle. Track one is at the top, track two is to the right, track three is the role of the business community, a very powerful agent for change if they get the vision to see that possibility for change. Track four is citizen exchange programs, like the Fulbright program in this country, bringing people from one culture to another, where they learn new skills and go back home and try them out. Track five is what we do in our institute. It's education training, little research. Track six is peace activism. That's a very vital concept these days. As a matter of fact, it really has come into its own in the last 4 or 5 years. The best example that I know of is what happened in Jakarta, Indonesia in 1999 when thousands of people demonstrated against the government and they overthrew a 32-year dictatorship. Same thing happened in Belgrade over a six-week period. Over 1 million people demonstrated after a flawed election, and Mr. Milosevic was removed from power and from the country. He is now on trial in The Hague for genocide, among other crimes. This has happened twice in the Philippines, once in Nepal. It's happened in Hong Kong just on the 1st of July of this year. 500,000 people demonstrated against a rule passed by the Hong Kong government. For the first time in the history of China, they withdrew the law. And so the people are really speaking. Actually, the biggest demonstration in history, when 15 million people around the world demonstrated against U.S. policy in Iraq, which is a very dramatic shift. Track 7 is religion. Track 8 is money. We're always looking for money. We don't charge for our services overseas. We're a small, not-for-profit organization, and we're always broke. But that goes with the turf, I think. Track 9 is an inner circle linking all of the 8 tracks together, and it's communication. It's what you're doing right now. It's a powerful change agent. It can be applied positively or negatively. We try to encourage it to be positive. That's why I'm happy to join you today.
And it's a pleasure to have you.
I thought I might talk a bit about some of the things that we have done in the world, a few stories about some of the successes that I think we've had over time. I'd like to start first with conflict on Cyprus. It's a beautiful island in the Eastern Mediterranean, about 7,000 years of history. And in 1960, as the British Empire was collapsing, they suddenly declared Cyprus to be free and independent. And that lasted for 4 years, when there was an attempted coup, a lot of what we call ethnic cleansing today. And the UN Security Council met, put in a peacekeeping force, and held the peace for a while. In 1974, 10 years later, another attempted coup, and this time Turkey, a neighboring country across the Mediterranean, sent in 35,000 troops, a lot more killing. All the Muslims on the island moved to the north. All the Christians moved to the south. The Green Line, where the UN forces were, was impassable. You couldn't cross over to the other side. Couldn't send a letter. Couldn't mail or make a phone call. Totally sealed off. That was our first place that we were invited to go.
You don't start small.
We only go where we're invited, the people in the conflict. That's a very important principle for us. And we go and we listen, which governments don't know how to do. And then we ask people what their needs are, which government doesn't do either. They'll tell you what your needs are and they'll fix them for you. But we don't operate that way. We interact with the people at the people-to-people level. And when we did that on Cyprus, we got permission from the UN to go to the other side, and we moved back and forth and found that there were small group of people in the north and in the south who really wanted to start a peace process. They were tired with the stalemate. And so we began to do trainings and so forth, and we began to build a constituency, not by advertising, but by word of mouth. And we made a commitment to help the Cypriots. And when we do that in an effort to build trust, which is critical to what we're trying to do, why, we make a 5-year commitment to the conflict. We then called on 4 Track 1 entities. We called on Mr. Denktash in the Turkish Muslim North, on Mr. Kalaridis in the Greek Christian South, on the UN in New York and on the island, and the State Department and the ambassador. We said the same thing. We've been invited by all those communities that I just described a moment ago to come to your beautiful island and to see if we can start a peace process. Because we're totally transparent in what we do. And we invited Track 1 to even join us if they would like to learn some new skills in the field of conflict resolution and leadership and peace building. They still didn't get why we were finally there. So I said, well, I believe that all conflict can be resolved. There's no such thing as an intractable conflict. And at some point in time, you, Track 1, will sign a peace treaty. And you'll have peace on your beautiful island. Turkish soldiers will go home. UN peacekeepers will go back home, and for 3 weeks, you'll have peace. And then someone on the far right or the far left, who doesn't really like peace, will throw a bomb or assassinate somebody, and there will be an act of violence. And by that time, I told these 4 Track 1 groups, we will have trained a critical mass of private citizens from all of those tracks that I described. And they will have connections in that village or in that community where that particular conflict has taken place. And they will be able to go there and contain the conflict so it doesn't spread out across the whole island. I said our goal is to break the cycle of conflict. If we can break the cycle of conflict, which has not been done in Israel and Palestine and dozens of other places around the world, we can then ensure that the peace process will continue. I'm sure they thought we were all crazy, but we went ahead and we moved back and forth. I'll tell you one story about that. We had a meeting in the Turkish Muslim North. We always sit in a circle. There were 35 people came there, including 40% were women. Went around the circle, and halfway around the circle, I just asked people to say their names and why they'd come to join us for that afternoon. A man said, I'm a medical doctor. He said, both of my parents were killed by the Greek Cypriots. I've hated the Greeks all my life. But I went out of my education, became a medical doctor. I'm married now and have a 5-year-old son. He said, I'm here to learn some new skills. Because 3 nights ago, I went in to kiss my son goodnight, and I found lying in bed next to him a large, long, toy wooden rifle. I said to my 5-year-old, the doctor reported, why do you have that rifle in bed with you? And the boy said, to kill the Greek Cypriots when they come after me. That's a pretty powerful statement. The father said, I came here to learn new skills. I don't want my son to have the same life that I have had. And then he announced to the group, I herewith forgive the Greek Cypriots for killing my parents. That's the kind of thing we try to do. We try to touch the heart. If you can touch the heart, you can change the way a person feels about the enemy. And that person can then realize that the enemy also has the same hopes and aspirations for peace that you do. It took us 15 months working separately on both sides of the border to bring 6 people from each community together on the Green Line where the UN forces were. 15 months of hard work. Working separately. These 6 came together from each side, having never met each other. We had a political leader from each side. We had business leaders. We had journalists. We had a president of a university. We had a poetess. They trusted us by this time. They had the skills. Within an hour, they bonded and became our steering committee for the future. And we have now trained over 2,500 Cypriots together over an 8-year period. What's exciting is what has happened, and what's good news is what has happened starting on April the 24th of this year. On April 24, someone in the north opened the gates between the two sides.
Right.
And within 24 hours, 5,000 people crossed over to the other side. My last figures are that over 700,000 people have crossed that line. That's over 80% of the population of the island. They've gone to the other side to see what it was like. And the people that we work with, that we've trained, are the ones who encourage us to happen, reassured people it was all right to go to the other side. You don't have to fear. They're also okay people. And the most exciting thing of all, as I learned just the other day, was that the man who opened the gates and acknowledged that he's the architect for that is the Deputy Prime Minister from the North, and he took our very first trainings, and we worked with him for 3 years.
Really?
And he's the one who opened the gates and said to the press, this is a people-to-people exchange. I want the people from both sides to get to know each other, as they've been separated for decades. What's exciting now is that on December the 14th, there will be an election in the Muslim North. Mm-hmm. My hope is that Mr. Denktash will be defeated, that the new wave of people will come forward, and that they will literally sit down shortly after that election and start negotiating a peace agreement on a basis of what Kofi Annan, the Secretary General, has already presented to both sides. I'm optimistic about the future of Cyprus. My second story It was about Kashmir, which is a very troubled part of the world, according to all governments who speak on the subject. I was visited in 1995 by 2 3-star generals, one from Pakistan and one from India. Now, that's never happened before or since, as far as I'm concerned. They came, they just retired, and they'd were at the Stimson Center here in Washington, D.C. for a month or so, and they got to know each other, heard about us, came to see me, and said within the first 2 minutes, "We want you to solve the Kashmir problem for us." Well, I laughed, too. I said, "I can't do that." But they said, "No, we're serious about this. We need someone from outside to give us some new insights, some new guidance." And I'd had many years of my career in that part of the world, so I knew something about that. And I said, "Well, we don't have any money, you don't have any money, but I take your concern to heart, and we'll see if something can evolve." 2 years went by, when suddenly I was visited by someone I'd known from Bombay who had his own non-governmental organization, and I tried out an idea on him. I said, "From my point of view, the power structure in the subcontinent, you have government, you have the military, and you have business. They're all separate. The business, people don't talk to the other two very often. What would you think," I said to my visitor, "of us trying to get the business community to come together and to work together with the Pakistan business community with a focus on Kashmir, for them to bring some new ideas, some new approaches to conflict?" He thought it was great. The next day I was visited by a businessman from Lahore, Pakistan, who was also a political leader. He liked the idea. A week later I got a letter from a woman in New Delhi who offered to connect us with the Chamber of Commerce. So suddenly, within a week or so, we had 3 different initiatives. Well, that told me something. I think maybe we should get involved. So we've been working for many years with the Dalai Lama, the government of Tibet in exile, in Dharamsala, India, and we had some money. We did diplomatic training with them and then visited Delhi, Bombay, and Lahore and started a process which continued for 3 or 4 years, building relationships. Mm-hmm. And we finally held a training in New Delhi, co-sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce, for 28 business leaders from India. And a month or so later, they did the same thing in Lahore for 50 business leaders from Pakistan. And they got very excited about the possibility of bringing about change in Kashmir. We are also working with Kashmiris on both parts of Indian Kashmir and Pakistan Kashmir. Actually, we've just last month finished our 4th training in negotiation conflict resolution skills with Kashmiris from Pakistan. They were all basically members of parliament elected from various parties. They came to Washington, D.C. at their own expense to learn these new skills. And we're now in touch with the Indian side as well, and we're hoping to do a training bringing 8 people from Indian Kashmir together with 8 people from Pakistan Kashmir to meet in the U.K. for a week of dialogue. The first time this has ever happened in over 40 years. So this is a real potential breakthrough. Another piece of good news, which came just the other day, which I'd like to share with the audience. 3 years ago, when I was in Muzaffarabad, the capital of Pakistan, Kashmir, I went to a refugee camp nearby, and I was asked to talk, and I talked about some of the things we do, and then I came up with an idea. I said, "You all remember the politician's bus in 1999 when the Prime Minister of India went to Lahore by bus and met with the Prime Minister of Pakistan, and everybody in that camp, of course, remembered that. I said, what I want to do is have a people's bus where people from divided families from Srinagar, the capital in Indian Kashmir, can meet by that bus with the people from Pakistan, Kashmir, Muzaffarabad. It's only 110 kilometers apart. All that has to happen is the political will to raise the gates between the two disputing parties." Well, they thought that was a great idea, as you can imagine. Well, I came back to Washington, and I began to push here and push there and go public and make speeches and write articles and so forth. And sometimes I got responses, sometimes I didn't, depending on the relationships. Well, what happened just last month in October was that the Indian government, using the phrase Track 2, which is the same, remember that book that I wrote in 1985, said we're taking Track 2 ideas and